Welcome to the Green Business All-Star Podcast, where we interview and spotlight green entrepreneurs and other environmental business leaders who are making a positive impact on our planet while making a profit. With your host, Anne Meador. Hello and welcome to the show. I am really excited to share my interview with Eleanor Iseth. She is a product designer and a visionary in the field of sustainable packaging. We discuss her journey from her beginnings at Beeworm at the Technical University of Munich to Milk Innovation Labs, where she is currently making products disappear through sustainable design. Now you see it? Now you don't. She's all about solving problems with products. At Beeworm, she is known as one of the Bioneers. Very cute. Very creative. At Beeworm, they use waxworms and other microorganisms in a biotech process to decompose polyethylene. Beeworm's mission is to tackle plastic pollution through innovative solutions. We spent most of our time discussing her current role as the lab lead at Milk, a packaging agency focused on sustainable perspectives for the food and beverage industries. Eleanor shares her responsibilities in building up the innovation lab, including client projects, designing packaging, and working on creative concepts. Eleanor is involved in some really cool projects, and she shares some of those with us. Brubik's Cube. Sorry, that's a tongue twister. Brubik's Cube uses food leftovers and special packaging to make soup. In the material lab, she works with collecting and testing various sustainable materials from around the world, including those from startups and larger companies, for potential use in sustainable packaging. We talk about the challenges and insights in sustainability, the struggle of balancing individual convenience with sustainable practices, along with insights on how to effectively communicate and sell sustainable ideas by aligning them with individual and business interests. At the end, Eleanor shares advice for you aspiring sustainability professionals out there, along with a lot of other great advice. So make sure you listen till the end, where I will also be sharing some great green business ideas. All right, here we go. Enjoy the episode. On the show, we have Eleanor Iseth. Trained as a product designer, has been working since 2017 to make products disappear instead. After studying at IUAV Venice and TU Munich, she specialized in plastics and the recycling as a project leader at Beeworm. Led by her, Beeworm focuses on researching a biotechnological process where polyethylene is decomposed with the help of worms and microbes to obtain virgin-like materials. In November 2023, she has also been involved in recycling-friendly product development as the innovation lab lead at MILK, a packaging agency based in Frankfurt. She employs design for recycling principles to offer sustainable perspectives to clients in the food and beverage industry and to spark new ideas for circular packaging. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So you have a very interesting background. I can't wait to dig really deep into the different aspects of your career and what you find out what you're doing. So can we start off as your product designer? What kind of products were you designing when you first started your career?
All kind of products. So I'm trained as an industrial designer. Industrial design originally came from architecture. So back in the 50s, a few architects started to come up with a bit more strategical approach to product development. And this is how the field of industrial design developed. So industrial design has been always a part of architectural faculties around the world. And I studied I did my bachelor's in Venice, as you already mentioned in the introduction, focusing on product design mostly. So industrial design is more like an umbrella term. And then there is digital product design and physical product design and all kind of different layerings of this course. And yeah, and it's all about trying to solve problems with products, basically. So usually you get a briefing by a client, let's say an industrial client who wants to have a new product because there is some consumer that would like to have that product, or there is an issue that he would like to solve with that product. And you as a designer come up with the idea, you develop the product, and yeah, you work on it till the stage of prototype usually, and then you give it over to the production. Yeah, that's basically how it works.
Very cool. So you work for big companies would come to you for your designs, or did you work with small companies too?
I work with all kinds of companies. Okay. So I worked in different, as you already mentioned, that worked in different environments. Before I started focusing on sustainable topics, I also worked in the sports area a lot with clients coming from sports brands. I worked in medical devices, so if you're just a generic industrial designer, you usually work in a design agency, and then all kinds of projects just come in and you will work on all kinds of projects. It's a bit like consulting, the same structure of getting work in. But in my case, I specialized on sustainability related topics in my master's. So ever since, I've always been working on everything that is somehow related to recycling, design for recycling, or anything that has to do with sustainable product development. Now in my current job, which is being the lab lead of Milk, is that usually larger food brands are the major clients of Milk, but we also do work with smaller startups just because we like to work on more speculative and also a bit more courageous projects. And sometimes the startups are the ones that do have more guts to do this kind of project.
That's interesting. When I heard Milk, I thought that was an acronym for something, but it's actually because of designing products, packaging for milk products. That's where it started.
No,
is that what I'm getting?
The founder's last name, actually.
Okay.
It's just a funny coincidence. Like, he's named Andreas Milk. He named his company Milk. And obviously, it's a good fit for a packaging design agency that works in the food and beverage industry.
Okay, that's funny. So do you actually design the packaging with recycling in mind?
Yeah.
Do a lot of companies do that? Or is that something unique?
It's depending on where you look at, which market. So in Europe, we do have a lot of regulation in place to push design for recycling. So this over the umbrella term is design for recycling. And especially now we have a new regulation coming up called Packaging and Packaging Waste Regulation, which is going to force the industry and brand owners to implement design for recycling in their product development process. If they don't do it, they're going to get fined, or they're going to get to pay a lot of money otherwise, because there is this concept of extended producer responsibility in Europe, which means that the responsibility for whatever you put onto the market will be charged to the ones who are producing it, basically. Looking into other markets, I recently been to the US and I was a little bit shocked, to be honest, how like plastics and other single-use packaging is still used in like an incredible amount, which you're not used anymore if you live in Europe. And I feel like the awareness of the consumer and awareness of the brands is not as high as it is in Europe.
It's very depressing. You point that out as an American. We should be leaders.
Yeah.
In this, and we're not. And it's very depressing. I interview a lot of people from different countries like yourself, and they're so far ahead of the United States. It's very frustrating. But sorry, I digress.
So I did a pitch there in the Silicon Valley. There was an American jury, and one of the jury members came up to me afterwards, and she was saying, the problem here is that it's also a political question whether you believe in climate change, plastic pollution, and such environmental issues. That's not the case at all in Europe. Yeah, obviously there is some like right parties, but plastic pollution as a problem is acknowledged amongst the broader like public mindset. I would say that like the information that in the US it might be also like a political question whether you think it's an issue or not. Obviously, was impressive, but it's also a bit scary.
Yeah, let's move off that topic because I don't want to start ranting and raving because what side I stand on, obviously. Okay. Yeah, that I wish. Okay, move on. What made you decide to switch? You just saw the need for sustainability because there's a step we missed, right? So you were a product designer and then you went to Beeworm and then you went to Milk.
Yeah.
How about we jump back into the middle? So you went from design to Beeworm. How did you make that jump and why?
So I think the jump was more before, like I was a traditional industrial designer, I would say. Before my master's, I worked in, as I said, like sports gear development and other design projects. But I always had a really strong passion for the environment and everything that is related with the environment. And I had this like epiphany moment where I was designing, I don't remember exactly what it was, I think some skis or something. And I was thinking about it a bit more in detail and I was saying to myself, who needs this? nobody. Like nobody, nobody actually needs this. This doesn't make any sense. Like I didn't study industrial design to just put products in the market that nobody needs. I studied it because I wanted to learn how to solve bigger issues. So I decided to go back to university, to the Technical University here in Munich, which was already known for focusing on sustainability topics. So that's actually where the first jump happened, let's say.
Okay.
And at the university, I was doing this project about plastic pollution in my very first semester. And I just randomly stumbled over a paper, which was about biotic recycling and biotic degradation. And I just got really fascinated by it. So it was actually just like a personal excitement. And I started digging deeper into that topic. And yeah, it turned out that there was a lot of work that even I, as a non-biologist, non-scientist, could do. That's just how the whole thing started. So it was a bit a random factor in it.
So it's a biotech process for breaking down plastics using worms. Is that why it's called B-worm?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's actually B-worms that we started with, waxworms. They are known for destroying beehives. So that's what they call also beeworms. So the interesting thing about them is that when they enter into a beehive, they start eating the larva, the honey, but also the beeswax. Beeswax is a natural polymer. So the theory is that because they're able to eat natural polymers, they might have developed the ability of eating synthetic polymers as well. And in our research, we found a couple of bacteria in their gut that actually would attack polyethylene. And some other researchers found enzymes in their mouth region that also showed some interesting results. But we so far, like we did focus on the worms in the beginning because it was a good starting point, but then we started also looking into other sources. So we took bacteria from waste fractions. We took bacteria that we knew from literature had already shown some results and mixed it all together and did just different kind of experiments.
Yeah. I just had an interview. The last episode was with a company called Allozymes. And what they do is they identify, are you familiar with them? Have you heard of them?
I think I know them, yeah. Or yeah, they have, but I heard about them. Yeah.
Yeah. They identify gazillions of enzymes, gazillions, like millions every day. They isolate enzymes that can be used in as ingredients in industrial processes instead of the chemicals, these biological enzymes and gazillions. So there's so many of them out there. So just find that really interesting.
It is. Yeah. It's basically the same approach. Like we also try to find specific proteins or specific combination of proteins, enzymes that can do this degradation jobs. And in, I, as a non-scientist, was also super fascinated by this whole world of enzymatic, so of protein engineering and using enzymes to do industrial processes.
Very cool. Science is amazing. I'm it looking does. At the website now for B-worm. So you're considered a bioneer, huh? That's very cute. Pioneer and a biologist, a pioneer.
No, we just made it up like in the very beginning, joking around. And that was, we just
think very clever
because we thought very it was funny.
You've moved on B-worm, right?
Yeah.
B-worm to milk. Is it? So you went from a university setting to a private business setting. How was that transition?
Yeah, definitely. So just to, show the whole picture. So B-worm is still part of the university and B-worm is still up and running. Just at a certain point, it didn't make sense for me as a non-biologist, non-scientist, be active in the team anymore. So I'm more like on a sideline now for B-worm and more active on the milk side, but B-worm is luckily still very alive. And regarding this, this change, actually it was shocking to some regard, because obviously the big contrast is in, or let's put it that way, reality kills a lot of ideas. And obviously industry has to deal with reality. So it's not anymore about what an amazing vision you can paint on the wall, but you have to deliver actual solutions that work right now. But at Milk, we tend to, or we have this radar where we try to think in today, tomorrow, and the day after tomorrow. And what we did at B-worm was the day after tomorrow. So it was way in the future, like thought-wise and also process-wise, while what I have to do with most of the clients at Milk now is more either in the today or tomorrow section. So it means that I just have to be aware of all the conditions that are here right now, which means that oftentimes we wish something could be implemented already, but there is, I don't know, regulations, or there is technical issues or material issues or whatever that mm-hmm. do not make it possible to implement this solution already. So it's all about understanding the current framework and optimizing a solution within the framework that you're given. And I in university, you don't have that framework. You just go wild.
Yeah, I can understand. It could be fresh, different. So different, all kinds of different.
You learn a lot.
Yeah. So the different kind of packaging you have, you want to give us some example? One, I see lots of different types of containers that you do. And then also, what does it mean to design for its end life? So does it have a certain amount of time that it's going to biodegrade? Is it compostable? Like sustainable?
Oh, that's so the second good one question. Is quite a lot. It's quite a good question. Yeah. So I'm going to quick on the first one, because we do all kind of packaging. So everything food related, from beverages to frozen food to fresh food, everything basically.
Can I ask you for beverages? So obviously you don't do plastic bottles. So what kind of materials do you use? Coated cardboard?
It's really important to point out that plastic is not always an unsustainable solution, especially for beverages. This is a really stubborn urban life. Legend that plastic is the worst. It's actually not, especially for drinks. If you compare a PET bottle with a glass bottle, obviously depending in which system they're positioned in, but let's say that both of them, if you compare it in the European market, for example, we do have a really good PET recycling system in most of the European countries. Glass, on the other side, has a really high energy input in the production and also in the recycling. And also the weight of glass is usually way higher than the weight of PET. Obviously, this is always a calculation that you have to make in detail, so there is no generic answer to this. But in many cases, the PET bottle has a better overall sustainable outcome, because it's just, you just have to do a lot of calculations there. And PET can be recycled, I think, up to 20 times, ideally, especially if you keep it within one specific stream. So there are cases where plastic is actually the best solution.
I was just reading a statistic in the United States. Again, we fall behind, but it said only 5% of our plastics are recycled. Do you know you do in the European Union? What the percentages?
We do have a deposit system in many countries. Oh, okay. So, for example, in Germany, you can give back your PET bottle to just the supermarket. You get 20 cents or 25 cents. And that is that was like the mechanism that changed the recycling game, because people are incentivated by getting money. It's as easy as that. And there was a lot of standardization and processes amongst the producers, a lot of pushing so that other producers could use multi-use bottles, and that the PET would be clean within this stream and all this kind of thing. So there was a lot of measures taken in order to make this work. And it does. So it's maybe also interesting for the listeners. I did write an article about PET recently, and how PET actually could be interesting for many other products as well, because it does work in mechanical recycling very well. But again, it's all about the framework. If the framework is there or not. In the US, I think you don't have any deposit systems. You usually use landfill. So that's obviously really bad if you put plastic bottles in landfill.
The goal is to recycle, but we don't really know what happens after it goes in the recycling bin. And so you'll have to send me that link so I can include it in the show notes.
I will,
for the article that you wrote. It's really interesting. So getting back to my question before, what kind of packaging solutions are you providing besides?
As I said, it's always a question of understanding the case of the client, understanding
some
the
examples,
setting. Understanding the setting, right? So for example, one interesting case was more like a speculative design, but we wanted to do a ready-made soup with a fully eatable packaging. So we wrapped the soup in an algae-based foil. So what you could do is just throw the whole thing into the pot, and you could eat the soup with the packaging. And then the outwards packaging was just cardboard. It's called Super Soup. And we did it in a it was a collaboration with, I don't ever know how to pronounce it. I think it's not PLA or not PLA. It's a startup pretty big right now that does this seaweed-based oil. Another case, a bit more simpler case, recent one was for a well-known German chocolate brand. He used to have this long trays, so basically like a paper tray and then wrapped in plastic for like small little chocolate portions. And then the small chocolates were also packaged. And we changed the packaging to paper-based bag where the inside was coated so we could get rid of that plastic wrapper. And we had just had a paper with a barrier instead of this big plastic wrapper. And that saved a lot of plastic and CO2. Yeah, but the thing is in packaging, you have to, I think it was also part of your question. So the end of life scenario, to look at that very much in detail is really important, because words like biodegradable or recyclable, they actually don't say anything. Everything theoretically is recyclable.
And biodegradable.
And biodegradable.
That's one of mine.
The question is just like, how long does it take? And in which planet will it be recycled? Probably not in ours. Using this kind of terms is also dangerous and confuses the consumer a lot. Again, props to the European Union at this point, because they're going to bring out a directive where you're not allowed to use this kind of generic claims anymore. But again, for us as designers, we need to check not only if the material source is sustainable or the amount of material we use can be reduced, but also, is there a recycling stream that is actually working for the material that we use? So for example, staying at the, if we compare the PET bottle with a biodegradable bottle, or let's say it's an industrial compostable bottle, which are also out there. So based on PLA, for example, the PET bottle, if you throw it away here in Germany, it will get into the mechanical recycling system. It will be washed, cleaned, shredded, and there will, and go back to be ideally another PET bottle. The PLA bottle does not fit into the plastic recycling stream because it's not enough material out there to make an own stream of for PLA. So it doesn't fit to this mechanical recycling that I just explained. And if you throw it into the compostable part, so there's like a bin where you can throw all the compostables in, it gets to the facility, but the facility is built in a way that it's composting organic stuff. So it's not built for materials like PLA. Mm. So what happens is that the PLA just causes trouble everywhere it goes. And if you throw it somewhere in the environment, it just takes as long, almost as long as fossil-based polymers, because it's still a polymer. So what seems to be the better solution in the beginning, because you used bio-based sources, so PLA is based on starch or whatever, sugars, and PET is based on fossils, obviously, and oil. Mm-hmm.
I was just looking for what the PLA meant.
Saying it looks better in the beginning, but then if you think it through, it turns out to be worse. And that happens with a lot of materials. And also sometimes people say, let's just use paper for everything. But paper is also not the holy grail. Paper also has high energy input to produce and chemicals and whatever, water, high water amounts to recycle, to reproduce. It's not. It's just not that simple. That's gotcha. All I can say about it. It's not that simple.
Getting back to wanting to switch their packaging, does it all? Usually, everything comes down to money. But is it always down to money, or is sometimes the marketing advantage benefit?
Yeah, it is definitely. It is. It has been for a long time. Now, again, I can only speak about Europe because I'm not deep enough into the U.S. market, but. So there was basically a wave of using sustainable packaging as marketing tool. But then consumers started to get confused about all the claims and stuff like that. So greenwashing was becoming a big topic. And now you have a little bit of a reverse effect. So many of our clients are a bit afraid to do something sustainable because it's just so vague and they just don't want to give any like possibility of being attacked. So some of them say, okay, I'd rather not do anything sustainable than doing something half sustainable. And then I make my a fool out of myself because somebody finds out it's actually not that sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a bit the weird situation that is going on right now. And then on the other hand, again, we have these regulations coming up. So that forces them anyways to do something about it. So it's a bit of a
catch
navigation,
as we call it.
Through different feelings, I would say.
Yeah.
There are definitely also, luckily, a lot of people within brands and within producers that want to change something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, that's good. And so in your current position, what are your responsibilities, if you don't mind?
I have several responsibilities. First of all, I'm building up the innovation lab to make it a bit more like a stronger business arm of ours, because so far we focused more on packaging, outer design, and that was also way more requested. But now with the news having more regulation coming up, the whole structural design and sustainable design becomes a more important topic. So I'm basically building it up. I'm doing client projects on my own. Like I'm also working actually as a designer, which is a lot of fun, designing, packaging, building concepts and several creative things in that regard. And then part of the innovation lab is also the food lab and the material lab. And the food lab is about doing very speculative design projects that we do on our own or with startups. So that's like a departure of ours. It's more like a passion project where we want to have like full liberty of working on what we think is good. So to make an example, just recently, and we work with chefs and with other people in food development. So we also do not only develop the packaging, but also the food that is packaged.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's like more like of a generic concept or overall like concept. And the last project we did there was me and two chefs. We worked on a recipe for food waste. So we took vegetable, I say like leftovers. The chefs came up with to do a broth cube out of them that is frozen. And then you have these frozen cubes, and the frozen cubes are packed into a kind of magic cube kind of packaging, which is also quite fun. We called the whole thing Rubik's Cube to reference to the infamous.
You're good with those cute names.
Yeah, I'm a designer. I come up with creative names. Yeah, but anyways, it was quite a cool project. It's still super concept-y, but we used this food leftovers for the product, and then we also used a paper by a startup called 1.5. They develop all kinds of new materials, sustainable materials. And they provided this paper that is made out of agricultural waste. So instead of using wood-based cellulose, this paper producer used leftovers of rice production and grain production and corn production. And they produce a paper out of that. And 1.5 puts a coating on this paper in order to make the product protection work, because you always need some water protection and oxidant protection. And yeah, and this overall product is a let's use waste to make something meaningful kind of concept.
Yeah.
And it's also on the website, so you can also check it out.
Oh, it's also on your website as well?
Yeah. Yeah. It's Brewix Cube. It's BREWBIKS Cube.
Cool.
And then the third branch of the innovation lab is the material lab, where we collect all kinds of materials from all over the world, from startups, bigger companies, whatever we find that might be interesting for sustainable packaging in the future or already interesting.
Are these
all kind of materials? So waste-based solutions, alternative plastic, alternative textiles. You will find a bunch of funny things there. So it's really cool to look at. Yeah. And we just collect everything that we find. And then we try to test some of these materials in our project, but some of them are also quite researchy. So we can't really test them, but others are also already on the market. So broad range of all kinds of sustainable and interesting material.
And what did you, department of the
material
business?
Material lab. Yeah. It's all part of innovation lab, basically.
Innovation lab. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Wow. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
You gave me a lot of examples. Yeah. A lot of fun. Gotta love your job, right?
I do.
It's just not worth doing it. So those were some great examples. Are there any others, like something that makes you want to get up every morning and work on that, or maybe a particular type, or is it a bunch of unique things that love it all, just some more than others?
Yeah, I can't really speak about the How to Beer projects because obviously they're confidential.
Okay.
One of them gets me really excited. Let's put it like that. But in general, my excitement comes from A, that I feel like I'm starting to be a bit more of an expert in the topic because now it's been 5 years, more or less, looking at the problems from all kinds of perspectives. And I feel like the strings are coming together in my head and things start making sense. And I actually can give some valuable advice to people who seek for it. And then B, I just enjoy working with passionate people. And if you are in the sustainability / sciencey / industrial sector where I am, working with a lot of entrepreneurs, scientists, designers, just a bunch of cool people, that is a lot of fun. And I learn a lot. And especially with BeWorm, I also was lucky to just meet the most incredible people from all over the world working on similar stuff or having similar passion for these topics. And this just gives me hope.
That's great. Now, to be a bummer on the opposite side, what are some of the challenges you've run into being an impact-driven individual who wants to make the world a better place? What kind of pushback have you got?
It's funny you ask that because I just had this kind of conversation yesterday. And we were talking about the difficulty of overcoming an individual's need to fulfill their own needs, basically. So every human just wants to have their own benefits. And that's oftentimes not the most sustainable outcome. So for example, everybody wants to buy clothes and look good on their personal side. But everybody also knows that our consumption of textiles is not sustainable at all. So I think accepting that is really hard if you're really an idealistic person. And most of the people who are in sustainability that I know also try to work on their personal side. But then all of us get to the point where you realize you won't be able to change people's need for convenience and individuality. It's really hard to find a way to leverage how people are naturally made for your sustainability goals. And I had a discussion with a friend of mine who is part of the last generation, who his idea is more like it's called the last generation. I don't know if it exists in the US actually. It's a
last or lost?
Last. It's actually Obama who said that first, I think. They came up with the name because of something he said. Anyway, so it's a group of climate activists in Europe, quite a radical form of climate activists who decided to use some interesting methods to make people aware of climate change. So for example, they glued themselves to the streets and blocked major streets. The effect though was that people got really angry at them. So they did get attention, but
not the right kind.
I'm still not sure. I have not made up my mind finally about that, but it was just a lot of discussion about it. And a lot of people didn't really start getting more passionate about climate issues, but rather pulled away from it because they were just, stressed out by their actions. So the question remains, how can we move the bigger public towards this more sustainable ideas and still, and make it work. So my personal approach is more to use that individuality and everybody's need to fulfill their own needs to leverage it. So what I mean is when I try to sell a sustainable idea to somebody who's interested in making money, I'm going to show him how much money he is going to make if he reduces his material because he uses this kind of... So I try to sneak in a little bit.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a great life skill to have, and pushing people's hot buttons, as they say.
Yeah.
Things that excite them.
And I think
I'm sorry. How do you say last generation in German? Because I looked it up and it's L-E-T-Z-T-E. I could not pronounce that. Say that. It sounds really cool when you say it. So I say it's a group of climate change activists using form of direct actions, mostly active in Germany, France, Italy, UK.
Yeah. Do you have this kind of groups in the US?
Peace, but that's more international.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that I don't know.
For Futures. But it was actually started with Fridays for Future, and then this was like a more radical wing of that.
Right. Okay, I'm going to change the topic a little bit and talk about to people who are interested in getting into sustainable packaging, such as yours, any kind of advice you can give them and what kind of educational background they should
have. I don't think it's necessary to have a specific background because I think nowadays you can learn a lot what is just out there on the internet. So I just used YouTube a lot, to be honest. It's as simple as that. I just watched as many videos about recycling, how recycling works. I read a lot of books about design for recycling, materials. Obviously, my whole background also fit because as an industrial designer, you do learn about producing technologies, materials, and all kind of this. I think the advice that I would give is just be curious and be patient because it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of reading and understanding to really get the full picture. I would say I'm still not there, although I've been doing this for a long time. Just because it's a really complicated industry with many players involved, with huge global companies involved who have their own logic in there as well. Yeah, and then you just have to dive into it. One part is the theory, and then at one point you just have to go, okay, I'm just gonna go out there and talk to all the experts in the industry and find out what they're actually up to and what they're thinking. Yeah, my only strategy there was to not pretend that I would know something that I wouldn't. So I just was always super open about my current knowledge and where I want to go to. But that turned out to be quite a good approach because usually if you say to people, hey, I'm not an expert yet, but I'm super interested in XYZ. Could you explain me this and that? Because I know you're an expert. Most people are open to do that. And you can just learn a lot from who's out there already and who has been in the industry for 20 plus years.
That's great advice. Yeah, compliment people out there that you want to have them share their knowledge with you. If you compliment them, that's a really good first step. Yeah. They want to help you out.
Also, sneaky little trick. What I do quite often, and now people are probably going to do that to me, is I listen to podcasts and then I look up the person on LinkedIn and I'm like, oh, what you said in podcast, whatever, it was so interesting. Could you tell me more about that? Blah, blah, blah. That also works.
Yeah.
I think my name is quite unique. So just by putting in my name, it will work.
Yeah. What about, you said you don't need to go to university, but you had good experience working at a university lab. Do you think that's a good route for people to go to if they're starting out? Maybe I don't think you have to go to school to volunteer.
Oh, good question. I don't know. Europe, you do have because. Okay. We like to regulate everything. No, yes, I don't know. But definitely huge learning point for me was getting in contact and working with people with different mindsets. So before I entered in, I worked on BeWorm. I was surrounded by fellow designers, tech, mechanical engineers, all kinds of people coming from this background, which do have the same mindset and way of thinking that I do because they have almost the same kind of pathway usually.
Right.
But then if you start working with biologists, chemists, biochemists, all kind of people who did natural sciences or who just have an other general approach of life, you learn so much and that opened up the world for me. Like especially talking to biologists I started with, they were so different. We would never have met like on a party or something because we just moving in different circles. Their way to see the world and especially their mindset of trying to understand every detail of something, like every minimal detail before they speak about it. That is something that I think a lot of people could learn from. And then usually scientists also have just a natural curiosity for things and an open-mindedness that I haven't seen much in other spaces. Mm. So for me, working with scientists was just the most amazing experience because it was such a different world but had so much to offer for me. And I think that's the general lesson is to get involved with as many people who think differently from what you do.
That is great advice. It makes me want to go back to school.
But you don't have to do it in school. You can do it in everyday life. Like sometimes I'm also fascinated by somebody who does how do you say this in English? Who's working on something physical, like a carpenter or something. Mm-hmm. If a person explains me in detail how they do it, how they think, how they work on their projects, that's also can also be super fascinating. It doesn't have to be somebody who had an academic background.
That's a good point. Besides university and school, do you have any advice people could meet like-minded people? You're saying important having different experience. It's important.
Yes, definitely events. I think all over the world there are fairs, keynotes, presentations, whatever events wrapped around the question of sustainability, or more specifically about plastic pollution and solutions of plastic solution. So going to these events usually helps by getting a first foot into the doors, understanding how certain like bubble looks like and who is playing in there and who could be like a significant contact. Because once you got into something, obviously you start meeting more and more people, and these people introduce you to other people, and that's how you build up your knowledge and your ecosystem in sustainability. And again, I think comparing it to other sectors, it's much more about wanting to do something than actually already having the solution. Because nobody has the solution, because otherwise it wouldn't be that mess. So everybody is basically in the position of really wanting to do something and trying their best. And if you come in with that mindset, I think you're quickly accepted. And yeah, I think that's all the advice that I can give on that one. It's just about being curious, open, and talking to people you think do a good job.
I think that's great advice. As we wrap up, is there any other advice you want to share with our listeners before we go? And
yeah, I think you mentioned it, and I think it's a really good point, the point of not getting frustrated, because I think that can happen quite quickly. But I think it's the same in life as in your sustainability mission. You just have to accept people's flaws and how people are made. If you try to fight that all the time, it's going to be really stressful and really intense. And if you try more to accept what is there and make the best out of it, and without losing your vision or your dream, but just accepting that it might take years to achieve your dream, I think that's a really important thing to remember.
Great. And how can people reach out to you besides, you mentioned LinkedIn. I was joking about that before because of your great advice about reaching out to people, guests on podcast, connections.
But people can definitely reach out on LinkedIn. I don't have any others because I think it's stressful and useless.
And a waste of time.
Email, so eleonora@bworm.org, be my email for Bworm, and eleonora@milk-food.de would be my email for milk. I'm not going to say my phone number.
If you want to learn more about Bworm, you can go to Bworm, and that's just one E, BEWORM.org. And then Milk is, that's an interesting email address. And I think you said that with your an interesting web address, and you said with yours, because it's, you want to say it again? It's not something familiar with that I've ever seen.
.de is the German.
Okay.
Like the German.
All right. So it's, let me see if I get it right. So it's www.milk-food.de/en. And of course, I'll put that in
down. It's just for the English version. But if you just go to the German website, and or you can also just Google Milk Food Agency and you will find
it. You'll come up with all kinds of stuff.
Milk would be not enough.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much. Hey, I hope you enjoyed our chat with Eleanor. Eleanor's work exemplifies how innovation and passion can drive meaningful change in the realm of sustainability. Her experiences and advice provide valuable insights for anyone interested in making a positive impact through sustainable business practices. We all need to be more curious and patient. Here are some takeaways from the episode. First, plastic is not always an unsustainable option. Sometimes better than glass and paper. It can be recycled up to 20 times. I found this incredibly interesting that deposit systems in Europe are working. I wish it was successful here in the US. I mean, deposit systems have been around for a long time. Industrial design is about solving problems with products. Designing for recycling is crucial for sustainable product development. Regulations are needed to enforce sustainable practices in the industry. As someone who's been regulated and has been a regulator, I agree, with Eleanor, that regulations are needed to enforce sustainability practices in the industry. Marketing sustainable packaging can be challenging due to consumer confusion and the risk of greenwashing. I found that really interesting. Some people would rather not advertise that they have sustainable packaging because they're worried that people will think that they're greenwashing. lastly, being patient and accepting people's flaws is crucial when working towards sustainability goals. And here's some advice for aspiring professionals, as promised in the beginning of the episode. First, you can get a lot of knowledge being in a university setting where you can talk to scientists. These are people you probably wouldn't be in the same orbit with otherwise. Be around people who you can learn from. People are always willing to share their wisdom. Listening is key. Reaching out to people you hear on podcasts, such as this one, and include something they've talked about, right? So use Eleanor's, her tip. You go to events, you can meet like-minded people, and it can help you get your foot in the door. Curiosity, open-mindedness, and attending events can help individuals interested in sustainable packaging connect with like-minded people. Don't get frustrated. Accept people's flaws and make the best of it without losing your vision or dream. All right, lastly, here's some green business ideas for you. All right, number one, you could develop packaging materials from agricultural waste, such as paper made from rice, grain, or corn production byproducts. Second, create innovative packaging concepts like Rubik's Cube. I didn't get tongue-tied on it that time. Rubik's Cube for food products, combining fun, functionality, and sustainability. What more could you ask for? Fun, functionality, and sustainability. Win, win, win. Third, you could partner with chefs and food developers to create new products from food waste. Fourth, you could focus on developing recipes and products that utilize food waste, reducing overall food waste, and creating marketable, eco-friendly products. Lastly, develop educational content such as YouTube videos or online courses to spread knowledge about recycling processes and sustainable design practices. Well, I hope you enjoyed the episode and my chat with Eleanor, and you learned something, or something sparked an interest, something that you hadn't thought about, or maybe it's been a game changer for you and you want to be a sustainability professional or a sustainable packaging professional. There's so much work for all of us to do out there to make the world a better place. Have a great day, week, month, year, life, and live it to the fullest. Talk to you next time. Thanks so much for listening to the Green Business All-Star Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, like, and or follow the show on your favorite podcast app. Also appreciate it if you would leave us a review to help us share our mission and the mission of our guests to make the world a better place while sustaining a comfortable lifestyle. Peace to the planet, people, and making a profit.